Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
April 7th, 2009, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, an interview with Winston Hendrickson, Senior Director Engineering, Digital Imaging at Adobe. Now, what's interesting about Winston is that he's a photographer and he's an engineer, and he oversees the engineering team that handles Lightroom, Photoshop, Bridge, Adobe Camera Raw. So in our conversation today, we really get to talk about both sides of the equation, sort of the cool engineering aspects of these applications that we use all the time, but looking through the lens of a photographer. It's a lot of fun. And one thing I want to point out to you, in the section in the middle of the interview where we talk about color profiles in Adobe Camera Raw, pay special attention to that. I'm going to bet you anything that's a feature that you're not using right now, that after you hear Winston talk about it, you're going to rush right over to your computer, open Adobe Camera Raw, and check these things out. But we have all sorts of other good stuff. This is an interview you just can't miss. So I'm going to get with Winston right now. And then after we're done chatting, I'll come back and we'll do a little virtual camera club business. Right now, enjoy the chat with Winston. So tell me a little bit about your role and what we see in Photoshop CS4 these days.
Well, Derek, I have the pleasure of being able to run the engineering groups for Adobe's professional digital imaging products, which include Photoshop, Lightroom, Camera Raw, and Bridge. And it's just simply a wonderful group of people to work on, a wonderful set of products, and just a great job to have.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So, you know, you're overseeing the engineering side, but you have a passion for photography too, don't you?
I do. It actually started over a decade ago with my daughter playing softball, and I started doing action photography with her, and it grew out from there. And I've actually gotten to the point where I've been published and been able to share some significant field time with some great photographers, and it's really gone beyond a hobby. I'm not making my living at it, but my wife would probably bristle if I said it was just a hobby with how much money I spend and how much time I spend on it.
So then I have to ask you, and this is the total loaded question here. So Winston, how do you organize and process and what workflow do you use for your photography?
Well, actually, I use all my products, not because they're my products, but because each one fills a different need for what I have. So I typically use Lightroom as my digital darkroom. So I import my photos into Lightroom, I tag them, adjust them, and so forth, and then output the final renditions from there. I tend to use Bridge after that fact to be able to kind of manage collections and be able to use them in whatever creations I'm making, whether I'm making a movie or a website or whatever. Bridge becomes the feeder application. From there, Photoshop and Camera Raw are, you know, two of the principal tools for deep editing and high polish. So I tend to, you know, process the bulk of the photographs in Lightroom, but then the certain select ones that are the creme de la creme receive the deep editing with Photoshop and fine tuning with Camera Raw.
So can you tell me a little bit both about the evolution of Bridge and Adobe Camera Raw and kind of what the plan was, and maybe even a little bit about where you see it going up the road?
Well, I've only been with the digital imaging group for the past 2 years, but I've actually been with Bridge from the beginning. I was responsible for Bridge engineering as part of Creative Suite engineering back with CS2. So I've been there from the inception. And Bridge's overall goal was to take the benefits of the file browser from Photoshop 7 and broaden those benefits outside of just the immediate context of Photoshop and allow you to do more management and organization and feeding to applications beyond just the immediate Photoshop workflow. So overall, Bridge's job is to try to streamline the workflow, to try to, if you will, be the bridge between tasks and so forth. And I think over the past couple of years, in particular with the DI portfolio, we focused a lot of energy toward how can we streamline the workflows for our customers. Let's, you know, sometimes referred to as, you know, pave the cow path. Look at the way people are working and how they're getting things done and figure out ways to make that more efficient and better. So with Bridge, Bridge, one of the key things that it's dealing with is you have a lot of assets that are coming through, some temporarily, kind of here today, gone today, some longer term, and so forth. So we added some key features in there to be able to enable that. Review mode is one of the favorites, because it gives you a very quick way. It's kind of like an evolution of survey mode in Lightroom, where you can go through a bunch of photos, narrow it down to a final set, and then save a collection off of that. Now, related to that, we've added collections into Bridge, which is something that we've harvested out of Lightroom in terms of the actual implementation, although the concept goes all the way back to CS2. We had thought about putting collections in then, it just didn't make the cut at the time. So you've got standard collections where you just throw anything in, or you can have smart collections, which are effectively like a save search, and it goes on through a series of criteria. And the really cool thing there is you don't have to change your physical storage organization in order to create some logical views of your data, which is just perfect for the type of things that many people are doing, where you have a certain job, you have a certain creation that you're trying to make, and you need to gather all the related assets and so forth.
And the way that I say it sometimes is that it allows you to create illogical groupings of, you know, so you don't mess up the logic of your organization. Because, you know, the thing is, if you're using Bridge as a primary workflow organization tool, then you want to have your folders named a certain way, you want to have a certain hierarchy and all that sort of stuff. The problem with it in the past, prior to collections, was that if you wanted to bring together a bunch of images that were outside of your normal way that you organize, you really couldn't, and not easily. And now, having these virtual folders, these virtual collections, you can do anything you want, and then when you're done with it, you just delete it and go on to the next thing. I think that for photographers, this has changed Bridge, you know, in a very profound way.
Well, and I think it's a losing proposition when you try to make people physically organize their data differently. What you need to do is tap into maybe some of the workflows or strategies that they already have, and then give them the tools that allow them to kind of do things on top of that. And so that's exactly what collections are trying to do. Organize it the way you want, import the files where you want, and you're going to have a number of different contexts. If you're in the field, maybe you're importing it into just a laptop that you use occasionally, or you're putting it on some kind of USB hard drive or something like that, different than when you're at home. But the collections allow you to work in those different contexts and create the organizations that you need.
Well, speaking of in the field, and I think I mentioned this to you when we were in Las Vegas, that one of the ways that I use Bridge when I'm in the field is I just plug the card into a card reader. I browse the card in Bridge. I don't even copy the card over. I might not even be done with the shoot yet. I find a couple things that I want. I grab them, I process them really quick in ACR, output them to maybe JPEG and send them up to somebody that needs it right away. Put the card back in the camera, go back to work, and then maybe later on I'll do my formal process. But it really allows you the flexibility in all sorts of ways to work the way you need to work at the moment.
That's what its intent has always been.
Yeah. So ACR seems like the perfect companion for Bridge. ACR needs to be hosted either by Photoshop or by Bridge. So, I mean, it is a companion by necessity, Bridge being the file browser, and then some way to quickly edit your images. Both of these, by the way, you know, the changes in Bridge seem to be very photography friendly. I know Bridge has to serve a lot of different masters by definition. But the evolution of Adobe Camera Raw, and especially you mentioned Lightroom earlier, it seems to be, you know, staying right on the heels of what we see in the develop module in Lightroom. Can you tell us anything about what the thinking might be there?
It's by architecture. A lot of people don't know that Camera Raw is actually the underlying imaging engine in the develop module of Lightroom. So the develop capabilities we add into Lightroom actually typically appear within the Camera Raw library. That same library is used and has a UI built on top of it and gets used in the context of Photoshop and Bridge. So by design, they're going to be similar. Now, the UIs will be different at times because they're servicing different workflows and so forth. You tend to have Bridge plus ACR kind of gives you the library plus develop module equivalent of Lightroom, but it gives it in a little bit more of a free-form way and allows you to kind of work with more transitory assets, whereas Lightroom tends to set up on a managed asset base and kind of gives you a nice, you know, integrated workflow. And both work for different people and at different times.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, one of the distinctions between organizing in Bridge and then using Lightroom is that we know that Lightroom is a database-driven application. What is it that helps Bridge sort of organize its work? Because it's not a formal database per se, but it remembers where things are, and you know there is something going on under the hood there.
Overall, you could think of Bridge as having an implicit import function as opposed to an explicit one. So when you point at a folder and say, I want to look at images in here, Bridge will more or less create a cache of those things, build the thumbnails, extract the metadata, all the things that you're going to need to be able to organize and edit these images. It just didn't have you go through a formal import step, and it will do a bit less work overall on the images because it knows that they may not be forever in your organization base. So it tries to do things very quick in real time, but it does import, if you will, into a cache that has a database element to it. So the differences between Bridge and Lightroom are not that great if you get down to the fundamental technical level. They both involve creating previews and caching information in databases, just that Lightroom sets up for a longer-term relationship with the assets than necessarily Bridge.
So I want to jump back to Adobe Camera Raw for just a second. And I loved what you said that, you know, really it's so akin to the develop module that we see in Lightroom. And adding the able to work on specific areas. So has that also been in the plan along the ways? And can we expect to see ACR continue to go down this path?
We'll continue to evolve ACR. And absolutely. I mean, what we've seen is that people do want to have more localized capabilities added into their raw workflows. And so Lightroom's going to need them. So ACR is going to have to supply them. And there's no reason why the Bridge and Photoshop user shouldn't have access to those as well.
Now, one of the things that I'm noticing when I teach and when I talk is that a lot of folks still don't really understand how powerful Adobe Camera Raw is, and especially now with the new tools where you can work on localized areas, depending on the photograph, without having to worry about things like layers and stuff like that. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that as a photographer? I mean, are you taking advantage of these tools yourself, or do you tend to just do things in Photoshop the way you've always known to do them?
No, local corrections are probably one of my favorite and most used features that have come out in the previous release. So as a photographer, as I mentioned earlier, I do action photography. I like to photograph sports. And with sports, you don't have the benefit of A, being able to control the light. You can't throw a flash on things and you can't determine the time of day when things are being shot. And you don't have any retakes. You've got to take what you have. And so one of the problems you typically run into are shadows on faces or other types of placement. With local corrections, it's a very quick operation to just kind of take that shadow down and so forth. And I use it all the time.
Well, what are your favorite tools that you're using in ACR?
Well, so local corrections is one of the ones I just use all the time, which includes things like the gradient filter as well, for more useful for skylines and things like that, the local corrections being better for spot kind of operations. I love the color profiles that we put in there. You know, I tend to like a more Velvia saturated kind of look. Mm-hmm. And so I'm typically always changing the color profile using either camera standard or camera portrait. Mm-hmm. Are two of my favorites. And again, it doesn't get me exactly to where I want to be, but it gets me very close. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a small amount of color tuning that I have to do beyond that. Probably my third favorite feature, and it's one that a lot of people don't know about, is the fact that if you hold the Alt key down when you're dealing with the sharpening tools, then you can get an auto mask generated. And again, I think this is one of the things that Adobe's Pro DI tools do very well, is to try to do intelligent things on the images to localize the operation to just where the photographer wants to operate. You know, it's a little bit hidden having to hold down the Alt key, so maybe we've got some UI challenges there. Once you know it's there, it's incredibly powerful, so you can limit where sharpening is being applied to.
The other part of that is that you have to be 100% view in order for that to work. I want to go back to the color profiles for a second. So can you tell me a little bit more, really, first, let's take it from the top with those, because these are important, what they are, and then, you know, kind of what the intent is, and then a little bit more even about how you recommend people consider using them.
Well, overall, when you're taking a photograph that's been captured, you're taking something that has a very wide color gamut, pro RGB space, far wider than can be displayed on the screen and far wider that can be stored in your typical JPEG that's using an sRGB color gamut. So the color profiles are different ways of mapping that broader space into a more narrow space. And one of the things that we found was that when we imported images into Lightroom or Camera Raw, people had an adverse reaction because they said it doesn't look the way it looked on the back of my camera, because the mappings we were used typically had a little bit more of a neutral look and so forth. And people oftentimes thought something was actually wrong. So the camera profiles give a way for you to be able to easily and quickly change that to a certain type of look, maybe match the kind of look that was coming out of your camera, or get the mapping a little bit closer to the destination that you're trying to go to. So there are a bunch of very fine-tuned and considered mappings that you can apply to your images. They're tied to the camera that you brought them in for. So you only have, you know, the color profiles for a Canon camera for a Canon image, and the color profiles for a Nikon camera for a Nikon image, and so forth.
So how do users, you know, actually get to these color profiles?
So it's a pop-up on the camera calibration panel. So you go down there and you can select, and you move from the default one that's been set and select which one that works for you. The interesting thing is, too, they're extensible. So as additional color profiles are created by Adobe or supplied by camera makers or so forth, then you can install them into your system and extend how many color profiles you have there. We supply a color profile editor so users can actually create their own color profiles.
And have you heard of photographers doing that?
Yeah, I've heard of people creating their own profiles. I've created some of my own. That, you know, you take an image in and you find that maybe camera portrait is close to what you want, but the blues are a little bit too saturated, so take them down a little bit and save that off. So again, it's all about time saving. It's all about getting to a certain look as quickly as possible.
It's very important to make sure that you're using the most current version of Adobe Camera Raw, because it gets updated a little bit differently than Photoshop does. And I'll have people tell me, you know what, I tried to use Adobe Camera Raw and it doesn't recognize the raw files from my camera. And I go, so what are you shooting with? Well, I'm shooting with, you know, a Nikon D90. And I go, have you updated, you know, Adobe Camera Raw recently? Because chances are you have an older version. And they'll go, no. And the next thing you know, I get an email that everything works fine now, I just needed the update. So not only do you get the, you know, the support for the new cameras, but also probably if there are new profiles available, those will be part of those updates also, and some other goodies, right?
Absolutely. So we tend to update Camera Raw about 4 to 5 times a year, driven by camera updates that come out in the field. So the team really prides themselves as quickly as possible getting camera-driven software updates out to the field. And just kind of as a funny story, we had, you know, Thomas Knoll, the creator of Photoshop, who is the lead of the Camera Raw team, actually turned support for, I think it was the Nikon D700 while he was on vacation in Yosemite. Mm-hmm. So he had his laptop out there. And
you guys take this seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so we should probably talk a little bit about Photoshop itself. We're both big fans of Bridge and ACR, and we could probably talk about it longer than we should. But Photoshop itself, Photoshop proper, tell me some of the features that you like and that, you know, you're impressed with in CS4.
Well, the interesting thing about Photoshop is we always strive to have kind of a balance between what you call the wow features, you know, things like the healing brush and so forth, features that actually improve efficiency and workflow, and then things that improve stability and performance and so forth. I think from the wow side, I mean, content-aware scaling is just one of those really cool features. It may not be something that you use every day, but when you need to use it, then having that capability, that essentially black magic that it provides to be able to kind of adjust an image to the aspect ratio that you need and know what parts of the image to not damage or distort when you're trying to change the aspect ratio is just over the top. Content-aware scaling is also categorically in a set of features that I tend to like in general, which are features that operate intelligently on an image. So it's not dissimilar from, say, Vibrance, which is another one of my favorite features. It's like, don't oversaturate colors that are already too saturated. Avoid saturating skin tones and things like that. And we've added that logic into the dodge and burn and sponge tools as well. Do better tonal preservation and so forth. So I think in a lot of ways where Photoshop really kind of takes flight is where we're able to kind of look at the image, understand what the user's trying to do, and then do the right thing, that combination. And the wonderful thing about that is it's win-win for the pro as well as for the aficionado, the amateur, and so forth, because it just works. Mm-hmm. And it's just a great place to be. In terms of the how features, I mean, we made a number of adjustments to make it more streamlined and efficient to operate with the app. We have the new UI layout with the tab windows and the palette management, which is really cool because it's very easy now either to flip between your windows or to just get everything out of your way and let me look at a borderless version of my image and so forth. The new adjustment panels, that whole trend that we have working toward more efficient operations. So we're getting rid of the modal dialog so that you can actually just kind of, you know, operate freely on the image. We're putting more direct manipulation in so you can do things like the on-canvas color adjustments and so forth. I think, you know, all those things are big time savers and make it a lot more efficient to operate with the app. Then from the performance standpoint, well, the big one was we did 64-bit for Windows. We had originally intended to do 64-bit for Win and Mac, but Apple kind of changed what it was going to mean to get over to Mac 64, so it's going to take us a cycle longer to get there. But we delivered 64-bit for Windows, and if you're dealing with big data files, anything that's like 500 megabytes or bigger or so forth, they can really save you. When we've seen people loading gigabyte images, you can talk about a 10 or 20x speed up in performance. So 64-bit is huge. We cracked the cork on GPU leverage, and so we added that in. A lot of people won't know that we spent a lot of effort in CS3 trying to do GPU enablement and had to back off of it. We learned a lot about what it was going to mean for a image editing application like Photoshop to leverage the GPU and found that we had to kind of step back and regroup and retarget our focus on that. So, you know, we've got a number of features in there this time. I personally like the flick panning. That's just a lot of fun to do, as well as with the smooth zooming. Those are just some great features.
You know, and one of my favorite technologies that I think is also a wow technology are the updated merging technologies. I think they're terrific. Mm-hmm. Merging not only in the sense of doing panoramas and so forth, but doing a series of shots at different focal points and then, you know, merging those together to create extensive depth of field. I mean, there's really a lot you can do with those things.
Yeah, I think that the whole auto-align and auto-blend technologies that sit underneath things like photo merge and so forth are one of the biggest breakthroughs that we've done in a long time, because they're so fundamental to a lot of different derivative operations you can do off of that. And I tend to use them quite a bit. I mean, a lot of times if you've got a, you know, bracketed shot, just auto-aligning is just a lot easier. Or if you're compositing a couple things together, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bracketed shot, but maybe you took a similar shot at different times a day. Auto-align just saves you an immense amount of time. And then the logic to be able to kind of blend those things seamlessly together, the amount of work that the computers, that the software saves you by doing that is just enormous.
Well, the blending is really different. And I've noticed this just doing simple panoramas from CS3 to CS4, and they just turn out better. They just turn out better in CS4. The blends are more natural. The skies look better. There's just a lot of subtle things where you go, I don't think I got better as a photographer. You know, I think this is actually the technology that's doing a better job here.
Well, one of the areas that we invest in pretty heavily in terms of our engineering focus is around what we call technical transfer. And that's basically taking applied research projects coming out of our advanced technology labs and university research and so forth, and productizing that into features. And so we've increased the size of that team and the focus around that area. And right now we've got about, I'd say some 50 some projects that they're on the board for potential productization over the next few releases. Mm-hmm. So as John Knack says, I think one of the challenges with working on Photoshop is having patience. You can't do it all at once. We can only pick off four or five of those in a given release, and there's just so much potential. And, you know, the auto align and auto blend were two of the features that came out of that research.
We're talking about some really great things and some really cool technologies. Does the idea start somewhere else and then it's engineering's role to make it happen? Does engineering sometimes come up with the ideas and just develop them themselves and then sort of like get permission to include them. How does that push pull happen?
Well, I think the great ideas come from all sources. That sounds like trite, but it's actually true. So product management has the job to go out and define the key themes and the key customer needs and to be the closest to the customer. But we don't segment it in that way. We want everyone who's working on these products, be it a developer, be it quality, be it product management, be it manager, you know, even the admins, we want them all to be intimate with the customer and to take advantage of whatever forums they can, whether that's working the floor at a trade show, that's being on the forums interacting with the customers, that's going to user groups or whatever way. And what we typically find is the features come from all different directions. I think the highest density of features will come out of product management because that's their primary focus. But we do get those engineering driven ones where somebody will see a marriage of technology and need in a unique way. I mean, Jeff Chen is just one of the incredible engineers for that. He was the one that saw that photo merge in CS3, which a lot of people didn't think, why are we working on panoramic stitching? And, you know, we've got it, let's move on. And he really saw the capability that the SIFT algorithm was going to unlock with auto blend and auto align in the context of photo merge. So you get those engineering driven ones, and we get ones from our pre-release customers and so forth. We've got a very active pre-release group. We've got some very knowledgeable and opinionated people who give us feedback, and we engage deeply with them. And, you know, one of the things that I've said is that this team will go to the ends of the earth in order to get that feedback. And they're not interested in hearing the accolades. What they want to hear is how can we do better for you? How can we make the tool better for you? And so we get a lot of cool ideas from there.
Winston, thanks so much for taking time out. This has been great. I've learned a lot of things, and I look forward to talking to you in the future, maybe around CS5 time.
Well, thanks a lot, Derek. It's been great meeting with you and talking about CS4, and I hope we wow and amaze you with CS5.
I'm sure you will. Take care now.
Thank you.
Okay, now I want to talk a little Virtual Camera Club business. First thing I want to talk about is grab shots, because I haven't been running as many lately, in part because I haven't had as many coming in. So I think, you know, I really want to encourage you to send in grab shots if you have them. I promise you, I look at every one of them, and I will try to run as many as possible. I like to run one a week. I haven't been running quite that many lately. I'd like to get back to that place. So grab shots, put that back on your photography to-do list, if you don't mind. And then this month's photo assignment for April is vibrancy. And it's springtime here in North America, but vibrancy can be all sorts of stuff. It could be an enhancement that you do to an image. It can be a scene that's already very vibrant in all sorts of ways, let's say has neon lights or something. So there's all sorts of angles on this, and I hope you pick one of them and embrace this month's photo assignment and send something in. You have to the end of April to get your submission for vibrancy into the Digital Story. And if you have any questions about that, just click on the submissions link on thedigitalstory.com, and you'll get all the information you need. And I want to thank our sponsors, SiteGrinder, just a terrific way to build websites for photographers, using Photoshop as your design tool and then SiteGrinder as the plugin to create the code. And if you have any doubts about how cool this tool is, listen to last week's podcast where I talk with Chris Lang. He really covers it very well. And I also want to thank Red River Paper, the makers of fabulous paper at affordable prices. How much better does it get than that? And Boinks TV and Photomagico by Boinks, also two great applications. I'm using Boinks TV right now for some videos that I'll be publishing on the Digital Story very soon. And I think when you see them, you'll understand how powerful this software is. Okay, so that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Winston. I'll have more great stuff for you next week. Until then, get out there with your camera, take some shots, and I'll meet you back here for the Digital Story next time. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.